This is Bondi Tunes International. In this interview, we'll be talking about consent. Consent is an agreement between participants to engage in sexual activity. Consent should be clearly and freely communicated. A verbal and affirmative expression of consent can help both a person and their partner to understand and respect each other's boundaries. I interviewed our Melbourne correspondent, Melissa Grima, who is in her mid-40s and who has experienced some very confronting situations with men in social environments. This interview contains some disturbing mature content from her experiences and reports from others. It may not be suitable for people under the age of 15. You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. Melissa Grima is our correspondent, and she joins me now from Melbourne. How are you, Melissa?
I'm great, Henry. How are you doing?
I'm alive and kicking. Been sick for a while, but I'm getting good now. It's been a while, hasn't it? And now let's talk about a serious subject this week, and it's simply, you know, the term consent is gone viral. What is consent, Melissa?
Well, the Australian legal definition of consent is an individual's free agreement to participate in an activity. Consent can only be given if it's free and voluntary, without fear, coercion, intimidation, or anything else that inhibits free agreement.
Right. Now, we will get into this later on, and we're going to be playing some reports from a national broadcaster, the SBS in Australia and the ABC. There's a current campaign about advertising campaign about how men should treat women in pubs and consent leading to sexual activity. And also we'll be talking about an ad that was a massive fail. Also in Australia. But first, you have personal experiences of this, don't you?
Yes, I wanted to talk about consent because I had an incident that happened on a date last month. And you know me, I'm quite open talking about my dating experiences.
Yes.
And what surprised me afterwards was the different reactions I got from people when I told them what happened. And people's views of consent and the whole situation and what's right and wrong was so different, and it really frustrated, annoyed and upset me that I was still facing, you know, such a varied views, like in 2022.
Did you have, you know, just to explain to our audience, you are single, you're in your early 40s, you are dating both online and in real time, if you know what I mean, in pubs and that kind of thing.
Yes.
When you look back, we obviously have this new realization of consent. It shouldn't be new, but sadly it is. And we have to put out these media campaigns to tell men to, you know, behave. As a younger person, before, you know, if you go back to the 90s, do you feel that there was like no consent in your own personal experiences?
No. And for me, I've always been quite vocal, and I think the way I word things now in my 40s is a result of like growing up in the 90s as a teenager, because back then, if you were a girl and you turned a guy on, like heaven forbid you were perceived as a cock tease, to use that terminology, is what we call it in Australia.
Yes.
I was always very vocal about what my boundaries were and what I was willing to do sexually and what I wasn't willing to do sexually. So I was never afraid to have those conversations when I was younger, and I continue to have those conversations as an adult.
Melissa, did you intimidate men? Do you think you did? Because it sounds like, you know, if you look at back in the 80s and the 90s, women felt really bad if something went wrong. They thought it was their fault. But you sounded like you were pretty full on. You weren't taking any crap from the guys.
I'm more full on now than I was back then. But I think the difference is when I was younger, and I didn't get myself into that many situations, to be honest. I didn't date a lot when I was in my 20s. If I did pick up a guy, I passed him at a nightclub, and I didn't go any further than that, right? On the few occasions that I might have done something a bit more with someone, then I would say, listen, I'm willing to do this. I'm not going to have sex with you, like actual sex, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, the difference is when I was younger, men would keep trying, right? And so I've been living in Melbourne for 10 years now, and I've been on online dating maybe for about 8, right? So in my mid to late 30s, and a bit of my early 40s, I did get guys who I'd say, no, don't do that, and they kept pushing, right? Mm-hmm. But now I'm at the age where I am, and I'm quite vocal with what I am willing and not willing to do. I don't get the fact that they still want to push, because we live in this post-Me Too movement. The guys are not teenagers anymore. And I've said this to many guys, like, you know, I had a date during COVID and the guy was trying to push. And I said, you're not a 16-year-old boy. I know where your penis is. If I want to put my hand on it, I'll do it myself. You don't need to grab my hand because I know where it is. Right? I shouldn't be having that conversation with someone who's 40.
Well, here's the thing. Someone of that demographic, a 40-year-old man, may not be as in tune as a 20-something-year-old man, because the 40-year-old man would have been acting like as a 20-plus-year-old man would have acted totally different because of the time. I'm not justifying this. I'm just saying that's...
No, I totally agree with you. And perhaps I'm being naive that I would expect that men have grown out of that. And I don't mean all men, so I'm not paraphrasing every single man. But I have been on many dates where guys think coercion is going to change my mind, right? And it annoys me to no end.
You said to me off air that you were going to be candid, and you certainly are. Do you want to tell us some of your experiences?
So I'm going to talk about something that happened to me recently.
Sure.
I went on a date with a gentleman, and he had asked me if I enjoyed sex and what my enjoyment level was from 1 to 10 or something, and 10 being if it was my favorite thing. And I said, I don't talk about sex before I meet someone because I don't go into dates with expectations, and I don't bring up sex until I've met someone. So I'm laying the tone of what the date's going to be like and the context of it. And we'd had several conversations about how I said, I'm single and I'm very, what's the word? I'm a highly sexual person, but I don't sleep around. Okay. So that was all out there before the date. We were having a great time on the date, like 3 hours of back and forth conversation, no lull. There was attraction there. He was being very complimentary of me. We kissed and it was great. And, you know, I've been waiting to do that all night. And then he goes, let's go back to your house. And I said, I don't go back to my house on first dates. Right. But at the same time, I was feeling pretty amorous, and, you know, so I said, listen, I never go back to my house on a first date. I said, if you want to keep drinking and go back to my house, that's fine, but you're not going to get a home run. I'm going to make that very clear. We might fall around, I don't know, but there's definitely not going to be a home run. You need to make your decision about what you want to do. I'm going to go get a drink and you think about it. So I left him with that, and I said to him, by the way, don't think I'm going to change my mind when I go home and I'm just doing this to play hard to get. Like, I'm honestly being serious about what is and isn't on offer, right? I went to get my drink, and then he said, let's go. So we went back to my house, and we were sitting down, chatting, having more drinks, and I brought it up again. So it was quite clear what was happening. So then anyway, after talking and you know, making out and whatever, we made our way to the bedroom. And he took off all of his clothes and jumped under the sheets. And
very presumptuous, eh?
Well, he looked at me and he said, why do you still have your clothes on, and why are you on top, like on the bed and not in the bed? And I said, mister, you have been married way too long if you think that this is how it happens. I said, it's supposed to be this whole consensual thing. We take each other's clothes off. It's like unwrapping a present. But also, when you do that, You're both saying to each other, this is okay. I'm giving you permission to take my clothes off. You're giving me permission to take off yours. You don't just take your clothes off and jump under the sheets. I'm not your wife, you know?
Yes.
And I said to him, dude, you've also left your socks on. Hello? This is like a bad 70s porn. So, honestly, like I said, dude.
So what happened? Know. What happened, Melissa?
So then, you know, we're fooling around and he started with some really horrific sex talk. Now, this guy had been in a relationship with one person for quite some time. He actually had three kids, three daughters.
Mm.
And I never date guys with kids, but it turned out he knew a friend of mine and he endorsed him and everything else. So I thought I'd give it a go. And so he started with this sex talk and it was really, really bad.
Graphic
like,
stuff.
I honestly felt like a bit of a whore. Like I've never been spoken to like that. And I'm all for, like, you know, going with the flow and talking to people and seeing what they like. But that was just, it was way too much.
What happened?
And so we were fooling around and, you know, I was doing what I was happy with and I had let him know what my boundaries were.
Mm.
And then he kind of put his ass towards me, right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, what's this going on? And then I ignored it, but then he tried again and I said, what do you want? Like, what are you wanting me to do with that? Yeah, and he goes, I want to do everything. And I'm like, well, no. And then he said, let's have sex. Mm-hmm. And I said, I told you that that wasn't on the cards, right? He goes, let's just do it. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. And I told you that. And you knew that before you came here. He goes, oh, who cares? We're doing everything else. What's the difference?
Mm.
I stopped and I said, I made it very clear. I'm not spending the rest of my evening sitting here and having this argument with you. You either accept the fact that that's not happening tonight or you leave my house. I'm going to the bathroom now to wash my hands.
It was your house. That's important.
Yes. I said, when I come back, you can let me know what you've decided. I went off. I was angry. And you can hear it in my voice. Mm. I spoke to him like this. I came back and he said, no, Melissa, I'm going to stay. It's fine. I said, are you sure? He said, yes. Okay. So I'm back in bed. We're fooling around a bit. It's not getting any better. I'm completely turned off. I was turned off by the bad sex talk. This is just worse. It hasn't improved with the apologies. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a bad person. I was screaming at this stage and I said, you are a father of women. You are raising three daughters.
Gosh.
You don't understand consent and boundaries. Like, why did you think that that was okay when I've made it very clear that none of that was to go on? Oh, no, I'm sorry. I just got caught up. I'm not a bad person.
It's kind of a weak excuse, though, isn't it?
Right.
Mm.
And then he said, I said, you need to leave my house. So then he got dressed and I was in bed and I was covered in sheets and I had my back to him and he said, I'm not a bad person. Please let me stay. I'm dressed now. It won't happen again. So then he got into bed and because I'd given him my back, he came to me and he said, oh, this has happened to you before, hasn't it? Like, this is why you're acting like this. Like, it's happened to you before. I went, get out of my house right now. Get out. And I was livid. Don't victim blame shame me when this is on you. And has it happened before? What's happened before and what made me snap is all these times that guys, and I've told them nothing's going to happen, and they keep going. And they keep going, right? I had a guy once, Henry, come over and he wanted to use my bathroom in the afternoon. And then he threw me up against the wall and started kissing me. But then he was like pressing his erection into me. And I said, and the guy was a carpenter, right? And I said, oh, the carpenter's brought me some wood, has he? And he goes, that is the most lame dad joke ever, Melissa. I said, no, what's lame is that you've got an erection and you're pushing it into my groin and I'm supposed to, what, ignore it? No.
Mm.
You need to leave. So has it happened before? It's happened before that I have had men push my boundaries, and I'm sure I'd be hard-pressed to find a woman that it probably hasn't happened to.
Okay. But sorry, yes, I just want to let our listeners know that I'm talking with Melissa Greemer, our correspondent in Melbourne, and Henry in Sydney, Australia, for Bondi Tunes International. I want to ask you, were you scared? Because you're pretty full on. I get the feeling that, you know, you sounded more angry in those experiences you've had. Were you scared at any point with these kind of situations? And the other question I want to ask you, because a lot of listeners will ask, why did you let this man go to your house?
But why is that even a question? We're both consenting adults, right?
But people will ask that question. People will ask that question.
Yeah, but this is my anger at that. I have the right to say to someone, would you like to come to my house without the expectation that I'm going to have sex with them? And I actually made it quite clear, and I gave the guy the opportunity to say yes or no. Right. And this is what's made me so mad about this situation. Mm. We're both adults. We're both in our 40s. This man has children. He's a journalist. He writes for the Age paper, for heaven's sake.
Jeez, right? Really?
Oh. I should be allowed to say to someone, Henry, when you invite me to your house, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to invite me for a threesome with you and Carolyn, do I? No.
Of course not.
Right. But if I tell you, hey, this is what the deal is, and I say to you, don't think I'm going to change my mind when I get back to my house. Why can't I have someone over? I was enjoying his company. I was having a nice evening. I made my boundaries very clear on what I was willing to and not willing to do. Mm. Right? You had the chance to either accept that and walk away. Now, I have done this many times, right? Mm. Having guys back to my house, whether it's a third date or a second date, or a fourth date, or if I've been invited back to theirs. I have been very vocal about what I'm willing to do and what my boundaries are, right? And while I've had guys kind of try it on, I haven't had any guys keep persisting in it when I've gone, nah, in the point where we're in bed and we're naked, you know?
Mm. I want to ask you about pornography and how it's infiltrated via the internet, obviously. And you got kids watching pornography, actually. And it's interesting. I wonder if that has affected what men expect of women from watching pornography. What are your thoughts on that?
The way this gentleman spoke to me, I shouldn't call him a gentleman. The way this guy spoke to me was like he'd watched a lot of porn.
Mm. Yeah, but I want to ask you from a broader sense, do you think that's a big problem? I mean, you know, school kids are getting access to porn. And I wonder if that creates these terribly terrible expectations, if you like, with sex.
New Zealand had an ad campaign, and they were trying to address that porn is not real life sex. And the ad was actually very well done. Unlike our milkshake ad. But the ad was very well done, and they were kind of like recreating stuff that you see online in real life and saying you can't expect this to actually happen, right? It's a big problem. It's a massive problem because
I would have thought so, yeah.
Guys are looking at these videos.
Which are highly graphic, and they're asking girls to do stuff that they see on these porn films.
The whole thing around oral sex, you know, and forcing women to do that. Mm. The way that women are treated in these movies, you know.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, there's a big problem. Because when I was a kid, we watched porn, but, you know.
You did?
Yeah, our parents had, I grew up in the suburbs, Henry.
In right? Sydney,
in
yes.
Hood, and I think there was like a porn club, right? I want to call it like the book club, but it was a porn club. Because every parent that you knew in your street with the kids you hung out with, right, they had a porno video cassette under the bed. Like the kids couldn't find it under the bed, right? And so you'd go and you'd watch this video, and then there'd be another one there. So I think your parents were swapping them with their mates.
Probably.
Yeah, and so I watched porn growing up from, you know, at various friends' houses because we'd all find our parents' video
cassettes. What age were you when you were doing that?
13, well, maybe 14.
Crikey. Really?
Yeah, I remember once a kid from around the corner, right? Don't ask me how, but he would have been probably 12 or 13, right?
Mm-hmm.
He'd gotten a hold of Animal Farm.
Oh.
And they had it. Him and my brother were playing it. My parents were out. It was a Saturday night.
Just to explain Animal Farm, I fear that you are going to explain this because I've just asked you.
Oh, you don't know this? This was a really famous porn movie. And I think it came out in the 80s. And it was like women having sex with animals.
Mm. I thought that might be the case.
Yes.
Gosh. Do you think it's very damaging? You know, you're talking about being the age of 13 when you're watching this stuff. I mean, I find that distressing that you learned. I mean, now we've got the internet and porn is actually the biggest. They are the biggest viewed websites. I think Facebook beat them recently, but otherwise they're the biggest viewed websites on the internet, which is scary. But do you think? I don't know what I'm asking here. I'm just blown away by what you're saying. Looking at porn at the age of 13, and you weren't using the internet for this. And what's it like now?
Oh yeah, I mean, like I remember when I was working overseas, and I was in charge of these young kids in Turkey, and the 12-year-old looked really panicked when I walked in the room and I saw that she had all this porn up on her computer and she'd be looking at it on the internet. And this was before, like, Pornhub and stuff, but she had found stuff and she was horrified, and I just grabbed the mouse and I closed every single page for her and I left her. And I just went, she's 12, she's curious. You know, Jesus. It's not my place to say anything. I think now I might have said, hey, do you have any questions? Because I'd be happy to answer them for you. You know, but back then I kind of
12.
Didn't do it.
She was 12.
She was 12. Yeah, I mean, but I, like, growing up in the 80s, right, everyone's dad had a penthouse somewhere.
Of course.
You know, yeah. So, you saw nudity in things, right? I mean, I grew up with Carry On films and Betty Hill. I'm extremely, like, I've got so much sexual innuendo in my everyday conversation because of the films that I grew up watching as a child, right? Like, we were very influenced by British television in Australia.
Yes, and Carry On films were pretty sexist stuff, weren't they?
Totally.
Melissa, I just want to play, SBS is a national broadcaster, one of the national broadcasters here in Australia, and I want to play a report, a two-minute report that they are showing. Well, it's a report that they're kind of describing a current ad campaign about consent. Take a listen.
Do you want to keep going?
No, let's go back to the party.
That's how you do it.
Do something or say something, a new ad campaign that empowers young people to check consent. The ads that are now live on Facebook, Instagram and TikTok shows young adults asking for consent in several situations. There are also racier 18-plus versions shown on Tinder. Sexual assault survivor and advocate Saxon Mullins was involved in the launch.
This is real world stuff, and I think, you know, showing that and showing those real scenarios will make a big impact.
Miss Mullins was at the centre of one of Australia's most controversial rape trials and was a catalyst for the changes to consent laws. She endured two trials and two appeals, only to end up with no legal resolution to her rape case. She says the freeze response is a hugely underreported aspect of sexual violence.
That is why you need to check in and need to have these conversations.
Consent can't be assumed. It can't be assumed from silence or inactivity.
Consent laws are nuanced across the country. Tasmania already has laws requiring a positive indication of consent. The ACT has passed laws in line with New South Wales. Victoria will make amendments this year, while other states and territories are still considering changes or have no current plans.
Let's just chill tonight.
While these new state advertisements have come a long way from the federal government's controversial milkshake consent ad that they had to pull from screens.
Well, drink it. Drink it all.
Sexual assault survivor and activist Chanel Contos is keen to see how education will play out in schools.
the next challenge, and the challenge that's always been very real, is the implementation of this education. Because we can have anything in the curriculum, but ultimately it completely matters what every individual teacher tells their students.
After years of public pressure catapulted by a petition by Ms Kontos, consent education will be mandated in all Australian schools next year.
No!
Danielle Robertson, SBS World News.
Do you think this campaign will work?
I hope it does. I don't think it'll work for everyone, but I think it will influence a lot of people. Mm. There's a real drive towards younger people being woke, so I think it will help in that respect. Mm. We do have a long way to go. Today in Melbourne, and it probably hasn't been on the news in Sydney, but two AFL stars, which is the Australian Football League, which is very, very popular in Australia, one AFL player was filmed on social media disrespecting a woman on holiday in Bali. Another two posted, videos on social media of them rating girls out of 10. And these three young men have been taken to task over this, and they've been penalised, and they've got to miss games because of it, right? So they're trying to address this socially here. Because people look up to these AFL players, right?
Yeah, they are role models, aren't they?
That's right. And one of them came out and said, oh, athletes are being persecuted. And he got taken to task over that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Been given a massive slap on the wrist. And they're trying to, like, oh, I've got ADHD. That's the reason. No, it's not. So they're trying to make an example of these young kids. And I think they should. Mm. You know, I think in certain circles, I don't want to say boys will be boys, but I think you will always get that type of guy, I think these ads go a long way. And
really, you do?
I think for a lot of people they do, because, when this happened to me, I kicked the guy out of my house and I went to my local pub because I needed to get out and I needed to be around people that I know and
trust.
That's right. And as soon as I walked in, they could see that I was not okay. And one of them grabbed me and they sat me down and they talked to me. And what was interesting was that, that group, like, they're people in their 30s, and they're like, that's not consent. It's not okay. Yeah. And you have the right to bring someone back to your house. You know, there's nothing wrong with what you did, because I was questioning my choices then.
Oh, you see, that makes you feel insecure, and this is the whole crux of the thing. The woman feels guilty.
Yeah, like I was really questioning my choices, right?
Mm.
But this is the thing. So anyone, people that I told over 40 said that I was in the wrong, and then people under the age of 40 said, no, you have every right to do that, and consent is something that can be withdrawn at any time if you ever gave it, and you didn't give it.
Mm.
So,
Can I just ask you, Melissa Greimer, I want to talk about alcohol here, and this is a contentious issue, okay? Men will say, oh, well, she was drunk, and I took her home. And I've read stories about women, who've been so drunk, they fell asleep on the bed and they woke up naked and the man has had sex with them, and then the man says, oh, well, she consented. And this disturbs me, because it's like she was doing the wrong thing by getting drunk in the first place. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. And in this instance, he said that he was drunk, and
was that an excuse as well?
That was what he said afterwards, because he messaged me and said, I'm sorry, I was having a really good night and I got carried away with fun, sexy times. It wasn't fun and sexy for me.
But you're one of many stories. You know, I've read a lot about this stuff, and a lot of women get very drunk and they get, as I just said, they pass out in the guy's house, let's say.
Yes.
And they wake up naked and they have been abused sexually. And there's this thought amongst these men that, it was that they consented. And this is the thing I'm trying to thread out. I'm trying to work out why men think it's okay to have sex with an unconscious woman.
I think it's a lot of society's conditioning.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
Yeah, we're here for you. And that sounds horrible, but as a female, you know, I have been sexually assaulted by so many men and strangers in my life. I couldn't even tell you, you know. And when I say assault, you can say it's indecent assault. You know, I've had men press up against me on buses and, you know, brush by to like slightly, you know, touch my breast as I've been in their shop or something, right?
Yes.
Like, things have happened to me from such a young age. I'm not alone with that. I'll talk about that openly, right?
Of course you're not alone, no.
And it was funny because when the Me Too movement came out, I had one friend who said on social media, I've never been a victim of anything. And then when we started giving examples, she's like, oh, all of that's happened to me. I never thought of that as assault.
That's very interesting. She didn't even know.
No. And there's a lot of things. Like once I was at the bar and, you know, one of the patrons was very, very drunk and he kept grabbing my behind, right?
Mm.
And after about four times, I said to the barman, mate, can you say something to him? Because I'm done. He's not listening. He's trashed. And he said, Melissa, you can tell you grew up in the 90s because you put up with it for so long before you cracked it. Like if you're a millennial, there's no way you would have gotten that far. I said, no, I would have been in the fetal position in the corner. Mm. You know, like, there's a big difference in generations and ages. And what I find is like not every man again, but a lot of guys I've spoken to over the age of 40 are like, no, you know, you shouldn't have done this and you shouldn't have done that. And of course, no, nothing is a given, you know. So, Henry, just say, I didn't say to this guy that I wasn't going to sleep with him. And I took him home and I had every intention of doing it. And then he started with that horrible sex talk, right? Am I obligated to go through with it, even though I was feeling really disgusted and turned off?
Mm.
Yeah? Well, no, I'm not. Right. And now we're having new laws come in New South Wales at ACT where consent has to be given in more ways than one.
How do you do that? How do you enact a law? And, you know, just for our listeners overseas, there are new laws in New South Wales and the ACT. They're not in the state of Victoria or Queensland. As far as I understand, this is very new stuff. I have not had a chance to actually check out what these laws are. Well, I'm guessing what they are, but how they're enacted. Do you have any idea?
It'll be interesting to see how you prove it, but
it is going to be interesting because how do you, you know?
And it's to relieve some of the stigma for blaming girls. But like you said, in the instances where females wake up and they're naked and they didn't consent to anything, then in that scenario, that is rape.
Mm.
And the laws back the women up. How you go about proving them, I don't know. I don't know. You know,
it's very difficult, isn't it? I mean,
it's very, very difficult.
You mentioned earlier on that there was a New Zealand TV campaign regarding this sort of thing. And I have not seen this, but if we can track it down, we'll put it on air after I stop speaking.
Hiya, I'm Sue. This is Derek. We're here because your son just looked us up online, you know, to watch us.
Matt, darling, there's some people here to see you. So he watches you online?
Yeah, you know, on his laptop.
iPad, PlayStation.
Mm, his phone, your phone.
Smart TV projector.
Yeah, anyway, we usually perform for adults, but your son's just a kid. He might not know how relationships actually work. We don't even talk about consent, do we? No, we just get straight to it.
Yeah, and I'd never act like that in real life.
Hey, Maddie. You're right.
Okay, Sandro. Stay calm. You know what to do here.
All right, Maddie. It sounds like it's time to have a talk about the difference between what you see online and real-life relationships. No judgment.
Many young Kiwis are using porn to learn about sex. Keep it real online. Get help and advice at keepitrealonline.govt.nz.
You sounded like you were impressed with that.
Well, I think it needs to be addressed, and I think New Zealand does a lot of things right, and they're often ahead of the game compared to us.
I agree, yeah.
Like, you know, they attempted here, the government spent millions of dollars on an ad campaign to show in schools about consent to primary schools and high schools, and they didn't mention the word sex at all. They talked about milkshakes.
And let's actually listen to an ABC, our national broadcaster's 2-minute report. We get permission to do this. This is a 2.5-minute video, but you will understand in audio. Take a listen to this milkshake ad from 2 years ago.
Do you want to try my milkshake?
Yes, I do.
They're the videos deemed cringeworthy that have left politicians from both sides confused.
It's a big fail.
I think they're pretty woeful. I think that it's a missed opportunity about an issue that is really important.
You do, huh? Well, drink it. Drink it all.
The series of videos published this week was designed to be used in Australian schools to teach students from upper primary to year 12 about respectful relationships.
They're so problematic in so many ways. First and foremost, they minimise the experience of rape trauma.
They use metaphors to discuss consent and avoid mentioning the word sex, rape or assault.
Do you want to go in the water?
I don't know. Do I?
Documents suggest the project cost the federal government almost $4 million.
I thought there was confusion there. I thought flipping perhaps the girl to the aggressor role model was tokenistic. That didn't sit well with me.
He's writing a pros and cons list. The first pro that he has in the list is she's pretty. I don't need to explain why that's problematic, surely.
State and territory governments have refused to back it.
And I'm saying right now, we will not be recommending the use of those materials.
It was a mistake, you acknowledge it. And something as serious as the issue it was dealing with, it was dealt with too flippantly.
Requests for comments from the Education Minister, Alan Tudge, were referred to his department, which this afternoon released a statement saying two videos, including this one, were removed after community feedback. It says it's speaking to experts to make sure the other 350 resources on the site are appropriate.
Successful videos made for students about consent do exist. Queensland schools already use this video produced by British police more than 5 years ago.
And if they say, no thank you, then don't make them tea. At all.
Advocacy groups say new education tools are always welcome, but honesty and simplicity is key. Bridget Rollison, ABC News.
I mean, talk about innuendo. I don't even know if there was innuendo in that. How are you going to talk about the hard subjects if you don't mention hard words? I mean, use the word sex, use the word consent. You know, do not make it a grey area because it's a tough topic. And, like, people are out there, they're looking at porn. They're looking at so much stuff. Kids know about this stuff. I mean, we had sex education in primary school when I was, like, 8. Kids know about these words. Why are you trying to whitewash it?
Well, it did sound... I believe it costs $4 million Australian dollars to produce this 30-second piece. And I just wonder why they got that so wrong. I mean, you're absolutely right. Why can't you say it for what it is? It got hammered, didn't it? I mean, this ad got completely hammered.
They probably didn't consult the right people, you know?
But it was too conservative, wasn't it? As you say, it wasn't real.
It was extremely conservative, you know, and I find it interesting that you can go out in public and, you know, they're pushing for unisex toilets and unisex change rooms and all the rest of it. And that's quite open. Like, you can go to Kmart now and have a unisex change room and the men and the women's are next to each other, right? Like, we're making some progress. So how can you make progress in that area but not in this area?
I want
does that
to
make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. It's kind of all it's not evenly balanced, let's say. It's a very difficult thing to deal with because of, as I said before, because of the internet for a start, and porn and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
I think that, you know, we have to become enlightened about stuff. And we have to also deal with the fact that we got the internet. And, you know, I also want to mention that it's not just women, you know, in terms of consent, it's happening with men as well.
I've seen men, you know, pushed up against barroom
walls. And, yeah.
Yeah, and girls like slipping the tongue down the throat and grabbing their crotch, and the men like, no, get off me. Yeah.
Do you have you do understand that? And, you know, that this, and also gay men, you know, you got to remember, you know, this can happen with straight men and gay men.
Yes.
And I did send you a report on this, which I didn't get a chance to actually read because we didn't have time to prep this. But it was interesting that that is not being talked about in the media, how men can really have problems with women. There was a case of a woman who tied up a man, I mean, it sounds funny, in a wardrobe and for days and made him have sex with her. I'm not sure how you can do that, but it seems that she did this. Do you think there should be a little bit more awareness of men being abused?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can do that either, because I don't have those parts, but I would think they wouldn't function.
So would I. And I do have those parts.
Unless she force-fed in Viagra. I think it's very interesting with the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp case, because there were so many men that came out on my social media accounts like going, this happens to men, it happens to men, it happens to men. So just because men don't talk about it, it doesn't mean it's not a problem for them. I think in some situations, it might be hard for a man to bring it up, because if it's been done by a woman, then they're very emasculated. And then if it's been done by another man, well, then that's going to make other people perhaps question their sexuality, or the victim question their sexuality as well. Mm. I think it's tough.
Yeah, and I also don't think it gets enough media. That this is where I'm at with this whole man thing, you know, being abused by women. That just doesn't make the popular media, but it is happening, you know, and that's what concerns me.
Yes, it'd be interesting to see if there were statistics available, but I don't know how you would get them, because I don't know, like, a lot of women don't come forward, so how many men don't?
Yeah, it's very interesting. What do you think is the future of this? Do you think, you know, with these ads, you know, the milkshake consent video, which failed so miserably, and you know, the awareness, do you think we're actually learning anything?
I think so. I think the younger generation is learning more. I mean, look at my own experience between talking to people in their 30s compared to 40 and up, you know, men and women. So I think it's an education piece, and I think that it will get better. But I think it's never going to be where it should be.
Never. That's very sad, isn't it?
I just can't see that ever happening, ever, you know?
What about you, in terms of the fact that you are single and you're online dating and you're going to pubs? I presume you're able to go to pubs in Melbourne again.
Yes.
Is the future bright for you? I do ask this question of a lot of our correspondents and people I interview generally, how you feel about your future. In terms of relationships, you know?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I've gotten to this point where I've just had a recent birthday and I'm closer to 50 than I am to 40. And I have always, you know, I feel like I'm starting to look middle-aged now, right? Where I was maybe getting away with it a bit for a while. So this is hard for me to admit. right?
Mm.
But I just don't see how that's I don't see how that's going to happen. I would love to meet someone, to spend time with them, and you know, have them in my life and go away on holidays with and all the rest of it. But the more and more shitty experiences I have, the less and less I see that as a reality. And, you know, I was really looking forward to post-COVID world where people were splitting up from their relationships and I'd be getting these people that were ready to get out there again.
Oh.
And then I meet this guy who, you know, comes into my room and strips down to his socks and jumps in my bed and I go, dude, you're not married anymore. I mean, I'm like, I don't want someone fresh out of a long-term relationship. But I mean, I should be riding a bike, Henry. You should know what you shouldn't remember how to do it.
Yeah, but it sounds like you are in a bit of a Ferris wheel situation, you know, where you're constantly doing the same thing, but in terms of internet dating and going out to the pub. But what else can you do? You know, I mean,
I've had people tell me off and go, Melissa, whatever you're doing is not working. And I'm like, well, it's working for other people, just not me. No, but like, what do I do? Because, you know, I'm not a fitness person, right? So it's not like I'm going to go online and join
a gym. Yes.
Club. Yeah. You know, or, I went to the gym for a period. That's not where I want to meet someone where I'm more hot and flustered and sweaty and gross. Like, yeah, it's hard. Like, you know, maybe I go to a golf course, but then how do you interact with a golf course? Because aren't you walking between, I don't even know what they're called, holes, ranges, what are they called? The
ninth hole? I don't know. Yeah. I don't do golf.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I go to a writer's club. I'm not sure, Henry.
Well, you know, it's interesting. What are your passions? I mean, you know, if you watch the movies, let's say, and I watch a lot of movies, and, you know, people are single and they go, oh, well, you know, book club. I'm a writer or I'm a big reader. Go to a book club and you might, meet someone there. Is there any particular passion that you have that you would say join a club online?
Yeah, I don't know. I might need to find it because, you know, I lived overseas for so long and during those formative years where you find the stuff that you really love, I was off traveling, right? So traveling is something that's really big for me.
It's a very good point. I just want to let our listeners know that you worked for Intrepid Travel, which is a beautiful company. Sent you all over the world, including North Korea. Do you think in those years that you were working for that travel company and, you know, you were a tour leader, so you were telling everyone else what to do, which I would not be surprised, Melissa Greimer. do you think that kind of stunted relationships with you because you were always, I mean, God knows how many countries you've gone to visit. Do you think that sort of delayed a more permanent relationship for you?
I had some boyfriends overseas that I met when I was traveling. So I had kind of more success overseas than I had here.
But they weren't long-term relationships.
No, like
they
I was dating a Maltese guy that I met in Malta when I was 23.
And we should mention that your parents are from, I know your mother's British, but your father's from Malta. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were together for a while and he came to Australia when we were living together in Australia. When I was tour leading, I met a Swiss German tour leader and we were together for 2 years.
Well, that's a long time, given that you probably had to go to different places.
Well, we both worked in Southeast Asia and he was very good in that he did our schedule so we'd have weeks off together. And so, you know, his dad had a house in Thailand, so we'd either go to his dad's house or we'd go for a week off somewhere and we'd go traveling and we had a great relationship. And then we came to Sydney and we lived in Sydney together, but it just didn't work in the end. But we were together for over 2 years. And then I had that Turkish guy and we were together for three years over, nearly four.
What actually ends those relationships is because, you know, being a tour guide internationally, is it because you had to go somewhere else?
The reason why it ended with the Maltese guy is because I left him to go and be a tour leader. But if that relationship was worth hanging around for, I probably wouldn't. But he was not worth giving that opportunity up for. And I saw that, you know, at the age of 24, right? Gee. So he wasn't worth me hanging around for at the age of 24. And I knew then that he didn't appreciate what he had in me. So I was like, well, I'm going. And then with the Swiss guy, we just, it was an amicable breakup, right? A bit like Jerry Seinfeld with his fiance. And that was okay. Yes. You know, and that was a weird breakup because we were together until he got on the plane and went back to Switzerland. Right. So that relationship had an end date.
But did that break your heart?
I knew it was coming. It kind of broke me, but at the same time, I knew that we weren't right for each other. Mm. And then the Turkish guy, he wanted to marry me, and I said no.
Oh, really?
Yes, I couldn't deal with it. Like
Did you love him?
Oh.
No. Well, if you have to think about that, you clearly didn't.
Well, I did at the time. But yeah.
And you were young. You were much younger, yeah.
I was with him when I was around 30.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's young, as far as I'm concerned.
It's old enough to know. But between the age of 30 and 34, I was with him, and the cultural differences were way too much, and I even got him to come and live with me when I moved to Bangkok, because we were together in Turkey, because I wanted to see what he would be like if I removed him from his home country, right? And he was no better, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he just couldn't help me around the house. And I just can't. I'll be with someone where I'll pick up and after them if it's appreciated, but not when it's an expectation. I mean, I have a Mediterranean background.
This guy's from Turkey, right?
Yes.
So was there a sense of the woman does the housework kind of thing going on?
There wasn't a sense. That was
it.
That was it. And he would say, in Turkish culture, Turkish man does nothing and Turkish woman does everything in the house.
Well, you must, you know what?
Be clean. But you know what my response to that was, Henry?
What?
Yes, because your job is to go out and earn the money and pay the bills, right? But you don't do that. I earn more than you. I pay rent. I buy the groceries. I pay for everything.
Good point.
The only thing you do is
shut him up.
With and without your clothes on. I'm sorry, but you're like having an adult child that I have to live with.
Looking after a kid.
Oh, it would drive me to distraction. We'd fight over stupid stuff. And then he said, Melissa, will you marry me? And I said, listen, look at that couch.
Be your slave.
I said, look at that couch over there. Every day you come home and you take your clothes off and you put it on that armchair, right? When I come home from work, I just want a clean living room because my head's so cluttered speaking Turkish and English all day, right? No, I spoke basic Turkish. Just enough to communicate to the staff what the English guests needed, right? And I want to come home and just unwind from my day. I don't want to see mess. I just want to sit in my living room, you know, have a vodka bloody soda and watch some TV with you. You come home and you leave this mess every day. And every day I ask you to put your clothes away. And every day you don't listen to me. And his response was, you will become accustomed to it.
Oh,
3.5 years. I'm not used to it now. I'm not going to
be. You stayed with him for that long.
Yes, I did, Henry, but no, I was living in Turkey. I was in this place. I wasn't ready to leave Turkey. There wasn't really anything like exciting happening. And I stayed there and then I got another job and I you know, moved off to Bangkok.
And
but, you know, I gave it a go.
And that's the reason I asked you, you know, being a tour guide, that, you know, you do meet people in different parts of the world and things can get very complicated with people who are different cultures, as you've just expressed.
Yes.
Look, we've got to go. Do you think there's a future? I've asked you this earlier on in this interview, but I'm going to ask you before we end. Is consent going to work for the millennials and, well, the Y-gens as well. Have they learnt something? Have men learnt something?
I think it's all down to the individual, Henry. I think it's going to be a lot better, right? I don't think it's going to be perfect. I don't think we're ever going to get perfection. But I think it will look a lot better than it did for my generation.
Okay. Well, look, thank you, Melissa Greenman, for being so candid on this broadcast that we're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me on, Henry.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Very Real Radio. Thank you so much to our Melbourne correspondent, Melissa Greenman, who has been really so very candid about her life story. If you or anyone you know are suffering from the consequences of abuse of any kind, we can't actually lead you to a particular website because we are broadcasting internationally. However, if you Google abuse, the words abuse and help, it will immediately direct you to a local help in your country. Google's very good at that. My name's Henry. I live on Bondi Beach. This has been a special for Bondi Tunes International.
I learned the truth at 17. Their love was meant for beauty queens. In high school, girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired. The Valentines I never knew. The Friday night charades of youth were spent on one more beautiful. At 17 I learned the truth. And those of us with ravaged faces, lacking in the social graces, desperately remained at home, inventing lovers on the phone, who called to say come dance with me, and murmured vague obscenities. It isn't all it seems. It's 17. A brown-eyed girl in hand-me-downs whose name I never could said, pity please the ones who serve, they only get what they deserve. And the rich relationed hometown queen marries into what she needs with a guarantee of company and haven for the elderly. Remember accounts received at 17. To those of us who knew the pain of Valentines that never came, and those whose names were never called when choosing sites for basketball, as long ago and far away, the world was younger than today, and dreams were all they gave for free to ugly duckling girls like me. We all play the game when we dare to cheat ourselves, it's solitaire.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.